It's Saturday, it's the Bro Show, brought to you by the Animal Legal Defense Fund and available free at www.bro.show. So pull up your socks, buckle your seatbelt, and don't forget to take your meds.
Hey, John, you ready for a werewolf story?
Yeah, I sure am. In fact, this week what we're going to do is we're going to kind of move from the movies and the 40s and move into a more contemporary setting and talk about books. And the book series we're going to be talking about is called Mercy Thompson. It's a collection of 13 books written by Patricia Briggs, and it's published between 2006 and 2022 with a 14th book ready to come out in June of 2024.
Ooh, she's prolific, in other words.
Yeah, she's done a lot of different things, but this is one of her main things, this book series. The books have been favorably reviewed in Goodreads, USA Today, and New York Times. In fact, New York Times, their third book called Bloodbound was the first one to reach the number one in the New York Times bestseller list in the fiction category. The books have since then continued to make the New York Times list. And so that's the how good it is, but what is it all about?
This is a story about a woman who is part Native American, raised by a white family, and also raised by werewolves. One of the reasons she was raised by werewolves is because she's a shapeshifter. She comes from a lineage of Native Americans who can change into an animal, which in this case is a coyote. The underpinnings of this story are fascinating. She's a Volkswagen mechanic. That's how she makes her living. And she is not affiliated with any pack of werewolves because she's a shapeshifter. She's not a werewolf.
Well, you know what? I just have to say, I'm not going to try to say that word. I'm going to say it wrong. That shape stuff. So I'll let you say it.
Okay. You could, well, they also call them skinwalkers. You could try that one.
Oh,
skinwalkers.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so just briefly here, what happens with this story is that you don't realize the difference between all these beings. Now, they exist along with regular, mundane humanity, but they are under the radar and they plan to stay that way. But very slowly, some of these fantastical beings like the Fae, which are fairies and elves and stuff like that, are starting to slowly come out into regular society. Mm. So that's going on. And then the werewolves are considering this too, because they don't know how much longer they can hide. There's just too much video, too much surveillance to hide much longer. So they're considering all this stuff. And that's a big part of the first book. But back to Mercy, what is the difference between a werewolf and a shapeshifter? Mm-hmm. A lot of difference. Here's the difference. A werewolf physically changes. In other words, they get down on all fours as a human. They start getting hairy. And, you know, it takes a couple minutes, a few minutes. And they agonizingly rearrange their bones and muscles and become a werewolf. So that's a process, right? Very physical. Shapeshifter can change into their animal at the speed of thought.
But they do physically change.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
It's magical.
Okay.
It's magical.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a lot like that character in the Samantha Moon book. She can change it bat. And she doesn't do that through physical transformation. She does it through other means, which in this book they call magical. So anyways, great story. I don't want to give a lot of it away. But it's really, really engaging and super relevant to today's world. You know, this kind of goes into the LGBT kind of stuff, in that werewolves are coming out just like, you know, LGBT people come out into regular society when they think they will be accepted a little more. So there's that parallel, which I found very interesting. Also, they're very relatable. As I said, these are working class people. There's no uber wealthy people or anything like that. You know, they work for a living during the day and whatever. And also the other thing, John, I thought was interesting is this whole pack structure. We've talked about this in a few episodes back, but this pack structure is something that humans gravitate toward. You know, in times of extreme conflict and stress and all that stuff, people look for strong leadership. They look for alphas. And so this is a situation like that. Here's a group of people who, if they were discovered, would be killed with silver bullets and what have you. And they have to keep on the down low, and their lives are being threatened. So they depend upon alphas in order to lead them and in some cases protect them. And it's a very powerful instinct. And we're having that now, too. The rise of authoritarianism in the world is partly the result of overpopulation, climate change, wars, etc. So if you want to read a very good urban fantasy, this is a really good one. I would not call it horror, and I
Although
would not call
some,
it fantasy.
I think there's some, yeah, but there is some violence, but that's within the context of it. It's not too over the edge. And also, I sense there's some mystery. There's a storyline, perhaps, and she's a female protagonist, so I get a sense that she might be there to kind of save the day in some ways to help people. Is there an element like that?
She can. You're absolutely right. She does. She's extremely quick-witted, and also because she can change so quickly and anywhere she wants to, the only limitation she has are what werewolves have, clothes is the big limitation, believe it or not, is that, you know, you have to take your clothes off before you change. Otherwise, you rip your clothes up.
So, got it.
Other than that, but she can do it very fast. And also, she's fleet of foot. When she's either human or a coyote, she can move extremely fast. She's not powerful like the werewolves are, but she's quick and quick-witted, and she helps them a lot. And also, she is in love with one of the werewolves.
Got it. That's a little bit of the romance thing, although it's not heavily slanted in that way.
No, it's not sexual, it's emotional. You know, they depend upon each other. They depend on each other to keep each other alive. So it's an interesting situation. That's it. That's all I got.
Okay, well, listen, I got a couple just real quick questions. One is that with respect to what we've learned about werewolves and having to change during the moon, is that carry forward in this, or is there something else that makes them transform into werewolves?
They are more or less dependent upon the moon, although in very bad situations, the stronger, more experienced werewolves can change. There's new werewolves and there's old werewolves. And some of the old werewolves in this story are 500 years old.
Wow.
So, So if you're very experienced, you have more control over your body and you aren't as dependent upon the moon, but they all react to the moon. However, Mercy is completely independent of the moon. She can do her thing anytime she wants. John, what's the word?
Hey, the word is actually an acronym that I happened to run into, and I guess I had a brain cramp because I couldn't figure out what it was, so I looked it up. The acronym is DIY, and most people know that means do it yourself. And I ran into it with this as I was doing research on our two-take story. And I'm going to give you the example sentence I ran into. I am considering toilet training my cat. There seems to be two popular products, City Kitty and Litter Quitter. There is also a Mingus cat toilet training technique, which is more DIY. That is our word.
There it is. It is. Hold on to that tease, y'all, because I got one little factoid here for you I've looked up. This word came into use in the United States during its ramp up for World War II.
Oh, nice.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. That was the era of snafu and FUBAR and all that stuff.
Yeah. When you say DIY, I think of Victory Gardens.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, due to my background, I think of DWI. But anyway, that's another story.
As we mentioned in the word segment, our two takes topic is going to be cat toilet training and using the Mingus method. And to kind of get this started,
wait a minute.
The Mingus method. Yeah, well, To really, yeah, I know it's kind of a little too much alliteration there. I couldn't resist it. But to really give it, you know, get the setting to the whole thing, you gotta, I gotta push the button on the Wayback Machine. Go back to the 1950s, as if you're listening to this jazz icon, Charlie Mingus, and it's down in the jazz club, basement jazz club in Greenwich Village, and he's on break. And what does he do? He makes an announcement that he is going to sell you the instructions on how to toilet train your cat. So that's what people believe, that this is where one of the popularized this, at least, or brought it to everybody's attention. And every once in a while, since in the mid-50s, it's been brought up in social media. But back in 2021, somebody decided to take his instructions, put it into a spiffy pamphlet, a folding pamphlet, and sell it for $10. And New York Times saw it. And before you know it, Charlie is considered a toilet training cat toilet training icon, maybe a pioneer inventor. You call him what you want. So that's the background. And
well, John, as I understand it, tell me if I'm wrong, that document is still available for sale for $10.
$10, yeah. It's very popular. I think it's out of print right now, so you're gonna have to maybe wait a little bit before you can get it. But you can actually, that would be more like a collectible. It's considered a facsimile, genuine facsimile. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
But it's, let's just kind of, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the method, but the method basically says, hey, it's a do it yourself. So in other words, you're not going out buying any supplies. All you need is you need a cardboard box and you cut it down to with a little rim on it. You stick some shredded newspaper in it. And before you know it, what you do is you stick this in fairly close to the restroom, your bathroom. And every day you hope the bathroom, you know, we assume the cat's going to go into it. And what you do is then you've got to then move it ever so slowly, inch by inch, closer to the toilet. And eventually you get it into the bathroom. And once you get in the bathroom, then you got to make that leap of faith. That means leaping. Taking that cardboard, continuing to basically trim the edges so that at one point you don't have any edge left on it. Stick it on top of the toilet, put a hole in it. Cat sees the hole, decides, oh, I think that's where I should be going. And hole, you can either make it bigger, this or that. And before you know it, you have your cat going to the bathroom. And Charlie says it took about 4 weeks. And I'll tell you what, he's kind of an argumentative, we'll call him argumentative, somewhere between that and combative, Charlie is. So you don't want to cross him. And because Charlie feels that the method works, and if it doesn't work for you, you just need to get a smarter cat. That's all there is to it. You got to find a cat that's as smart as his cat, Nightlife. So
Nightlife is the name of his Nightlife?
Nightlife is the name of Charlie's cat, yeah. So, but listen, what we find out right now, you say, well, that's, you know, not many people are doing that. Well, this is, everything about this whole thing is anecdotal. But clearly, evidence proves by the fact that there are about a dozen different, what I would call cat toilet training kits out there. And, of course, I already mentioned in the sentence a couple of the more popular ones, the City Litter and the Quitter Litter. And but you can find all kinds of them there. And the difference approach is similar. What you end up having is some items that you can use rather than a cardboard box. You get a container. You got rings that you can use for different size with respect to the hole. You've got a cat training seat for them. So it's sort of like training wheels, you know, if you're on a bicycle.
Wow.
And of course,
this is
some
stunning
instructions to go with it. Yeah. So it's out there. The kits are going to cost you. Oh, I like one of them. They supply you with some catnip too. I guess that's to kind of provide the motivation to
incentive. You
know, yeah, the incentive is there. Now, of course, you got to be a little careful because you don't want the cat falling into the toilet. But you know, it'll probably survive. No biggie. Kits cost about $35 to $50. I think some of the things that cat that Charlie said, and I'll just have to repeat. He says it's very important to get the cat thinking. And I just have trouble grasping that concept.
Oh. You know, I'm going to have to join that club. I'm joining that club. I've met cats. And I don't want them to think what I'm thinking. And I'm not sure I want them thinking.
I think they make the most, the optimum use of their thinking capability is the way I look at it. That's the way I look at a cat. But can a cat, what's the success rate? Well, again, this is a little anecdotal. I've seen numbers thrown around at 70%. Obviously, you know, different cats, it's the trainer has to be capable of having some patience, understanding. And also keep in mind, and this is one that's hard to grasp too, that there are different current learning curves for different cats. I sense a flat curve here, by the way, but that's okay. That's just one opinion.
Well, okay, now, I had a couple thoughts on this myself, John. Okay. It seems to me that there's some limitations to this approach. Number one, I think that a cat's intelligence and attitude might be two of the big ones. Cats do have an attitude, and they're a little bit on the independent side. So I think those things play into it. But moreover, I think really old cats are going to have a problem with this. Arthritic cats.
Yes.
You're going to have a problem. It has to be said, John, not just stupid cats, but fat cats are going to have a problem too.
Well, you're not going to want to start this before about 3 months. It's going to have to be, but you don't want to start it like at 5 years. That would be bad too.
Okay.
I would also would have to say a word of caution, and that word of caution is talk to your vet. And if your vet is most likely going to say, don't do this. I mean, the advantage of doing this is you don't have to deal with the litter box, the smell, the constantly changing the litter boxes and that, whatever. But on the other side of it, cats have an instinctive nature to want to cover up what they've just done. They're not going to be able to do that with the toilet. And as a result, you could run into a very frustrated cat, or the extreme would be a deranged cat. You wouldn't want a deranged cat.
Oh, man.
And the other thing is, let's say, for example, that you are able to get your cat trained to do the toilet and you've got two cats. Don't anticipate that the one cat can train the other. There isn't an instruction on training the trainer for this. Okay. So most likely, if you got two cats, the best you're going to do is have one cat trained and another cat confused. So I wouldn't do that. So, those are some of the things to consider. And when the actual pamphlet had a word of caution, they didn't want to get in any trouble. So they said, please, this is purely for historical purposes. We suggest that you consult with your veterinarian. And I think that's the word of that's the best advice I think that can be given as it relates to this procedure. So it's about
it. So now we talked about cats, dumb cats, fat cats, arthritic cats, and wait for it, deranged cats.
Hey, listen, I shouldn't laugh about it because I've run into those ones that snarl and hiss at you.
Oh,
scary.
Mom had a couple weird cats.
Hey, I've got a couple of groaners here provided to us by Vincent Anthony Lauder Jr. Ooh. And he's not. And the thing is that he's on vacation now, but vacation is not, it doesn't work into his, because groaners, he just can't help but give us some. And here are two. First, what is the viral disease that is an occupational hazard when a contractor works on a roof? What is the viral disease that is an occupational hazard when a contractor works on a roof?
I don't know. Roofing cough?
No. Shingles.
What?
Shingles.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
perfect.
Now,
perfect.
You're gonna feel a little disappointed if you don't get this one, because it's a beetle's groaner. Okay? And I'm not talking like
pressure,
the animal either.
Pressure.
So I'm trying to tee it up. Let's go for it. What Beatles song charted the highest in Italy because the song was assumed to be named after a pasta?
Oh, God almighty. Oh, man. Hold on. This one I'm going to be stubborn about.
Yeah.
It's
a small tubular whatever.
Okay. I'm going to have to give up. I got nothing.
Okay. Penny Lane.
See, there you go. I would have never gotten that one. Never got it. Yeah. Okay, I struck out, John. I let the team down.
Well, there's always next week. Return.